Today is January 30th, 2019, here on Radio Naturopath. My co-host Ron Meniza is out pursuing the sun. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. That's radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. All right, first and very important order of business. That would be happy birthday to my little nephew, Marley. He's 6 today. His birth sealed the deal that there are 3 little birds. And that way, we all know that every little thing is going to be all right. All right, so today I wanted to get into business about cholesterol. I think before I get into cholesterol, let's talk about being cold, because a lot of the country is cold and it's very interesting. People all over the nation are experiencing, it's very interesting because they're experiencing these negative temperatures. When I lived in Canada, I lived in Newfoundland, I lived in Nova Scotia, and it never got super cold there. Everybody's like, oh, you're so far north, so therefore it must get really, really cold up there. And it didn't get that much colder than it gets here. It's just that the seasons were longer. It didn't get super warm there. I mean, you would have days where you would have like real summer weather, but the seasons were much, the warm season was much shorter. On the solstice, on June 21st, you could get snow and you could get, you know, 70 degrees in our temperature. You don't say 70 degrees. 70 degrees is like wicked hot there, you know, because everything's in Celsius up there. So anyway, when you live in Canada, of course, you know, like here, if you're watching the weather forecast, you're going to see the forecast for the whole country. Well, in Canada, you see the forecast for their country. And that's what you say. It'll be, you know, it's going to be -4 here in St. John's, Newfoundland. -4, by the way, isn't that bad. That's -4 somewhere in the 20s. And if I'm right, somewhere in the high 20s. And so -4 is not going to be too cold. It's going to be cold, but it's not going to be too cold. Whereas, you know, if you're looking at Calgary and Edmonton and way out there in northern Alberta, you're looking at, you know, -25. And that's what it's going to be. Of course, -25 is going to be somewhere, I'm not sure, in the teens. It's very cold or lower. And you'd get these incredible negative temperatures in northern Canada and in the in the Northwest Territory and in the Yukon Territory. And you would hear about it, what it's doing in Yellowknife, what it's doing in Whitehorse, what it's doing in Calgary, Edmonton, and Winnipeg. And it would be really cold. It would be all negative numbers, and it would be negative 20, sometimes in the negative 30s in Celsius. Of course, you know that negative 40 Celsius and Fahrenheit intersect. They're the same. So negative 41 Fahrenheit is actually colder than negative 41 Celsius, right? Do I have that right? Yeah, -4 Celsius is warmer than -4 Fahrenheit. So they switch. So whatever I said, they switch because up here. So let's see. If -4 Fahrenheit is colder than -4 Celsius, -41 Fahrenheit is going to be warmer than -41 Celsius because they intersect at that point. Anyway, it doesn't usually get that cold, but they're going to be some incredibly cold temperatures in the middle of the country. So we're going to have some rather cold weather in the morning here. And so if you look at it, and apparently we're going to have some snow squalls. You wouldn't know it to look outside right now because it's gorgeous and sunny right now, but it's going to be we're going to have some snow squalls later on today. But tomorrow it's going to be quite cold. And here in stores, we're going to have a low of -1 and a high of 13. And then it will get down to 1 degree on Thursday night as well. So we're going to have some very cold weather here for us. I mean, it's not going to be as cold as the middle of the country. And then just so you know, Sunday, according to the National Weather Service, we're going to see 41 in the afternoon. So go figure. In the meantime, so how should you stay warm? Well, you need layers. And I've learned a lesson, you know, since I've been living, I want to say since I've been living in Canada, but that's not what I'm talking about. But since I've been living in New England, I've had to figure out how to make the winters bearable. When I was in Canada, I was sort of depressed and didn't have a lot of money and wasn't always able to buy, you know, a lot of nice stuff. And when I came here, I'm doing well. And thank you so much to New England and to my practice for making it so that I have a good living here and enough to afford things like shearling boots, like nice fleece boots, different kinds of warm fabrics. I've discovered the thermal shirt. I can't live without thermal shirts. Thermal shirts are really important. Yesterday I was in my office, and I never know what temperature is going to be in my office. Sometimes it's nice and warm in there because I have beautiful south-facing windows in my office. And when the sun is coming in, regardless of the temperature, it can get quite warm in my office. This is my personal office, the actual room where I see patients. And then when it's cloudy and overcast and damp, it stays chilly in my office. So, you know, the air doesn't move around. It's an old house. I mean, we're very blessed to be in a gorgeous 300-year-old farmhouse that our beloved landlord, Mike Healy, renovated. But if it's not super warm out, it gets cold in there. Yesterday it was cold. I had a sweater on and a shirt, but it was not a thermal shirt. And now I've learned my lesson. I have to bring a thermal shirt with me to the office, or start out in a thermal shirt and switch out. So just because, and I can't be wearing too many clothes. I have to move around because I have to examine you. So anyway, ways to stay warm. Again, the thermal shirt is a great thing. I mean, and it's kind of a health issue because sitting around being cold, I know for me, I'm not a person. Some people are naturally warm. I'm not one of those people. And if you are, and I do get hot flashes sometimes for menopause, but then if I do something crazy, like back off on my sugar intake, like I did this week, I get less hot flashes. So I tend to be colder. I have to resort to things like thermal shirts. And those nice thermal shirts that have the waffle pattern on them, they're amazing. And I discovered those in Canada, and now I have a bunch of them. And, you know, you can be wearing the same sweater and be wearing a regular shirt that's not thermal versus the thermal shirt, and all of a sudden you're much warmer. Right now I'm rocking a nice thermal shirt and a sweatshirt over it. and I'm happy. And then the other thing is to have warm stuff on your feet, whether you prefer fleece, knit fleece, or wool. A lot of people are really big fans of wool. I'm not as much a fan of wool for myself because I get itchy. And I don't think it's an allergy. It's just a fabric preference. It's the way it feels on my feet. But I do have wool socks that I wear sometimes. I definitely wear wool socks when I'm outdoors in the cold weather. If I'm hiking or if I'm riding my bike and it's cold out, I always wear wool socks. And that's important to do. Some people really love merino wool because it is softer and you can get away with it. My feet actually tend to get warm. And if I'm indoors for a long time, they will get warm usually. But the other thing is to wear warm shoes and discover things like, have one good pair of lined boots, whether it's shearling or fleece. That's really good. And if your boots aren't lined, then you go for the fleece and the wool socks. And there are places you can get those things inexpensively. That's something to definitely think about. And then for the rest of your body, I know Ron likes to wear flannel-lined jeans. That's something I don't tend to do. I don't tend to wear jeans a lot because, I got the old, a lot of you women out there, you understand what I mean about you never know what size from day to day your belly is going to be. You could have eaten a little too much last night and then it's bigger than it was 2 days ago. You could be in a hormonal status and you've got some swelling going on and you're pants can fit you fine in the morning, depending on how you're shaped. Your pants can fit you fine in the morning, and then depending what you eat, you can bloat. That it's a thing with women. That's something we do. So, because of how I'm built, I have very narrow hips. If I eat anything, my belly pooches out. So I'm not a big fan of the jeans. I need stretch. So I don't wear a lot of jeans unless they have a lot of give in them. So nice, huh? Can anybody relate to that? I live in sweats and fleece and heavy leggings. this time of year. And that's one way that I stay warm. And then for outdoors, now when it's going to be really cold outdoors, you have to really think about, you know, vanity, setting vanity aside and making sure your ears are covered and possibly making sure your face is covered. They have things called balaclavas that you can put over your face so that you're, you know, that your face is mostly covered. It doesn't have to be you can get those hats that just have the eye hole and the mouth hole. You can get those too, but a balaclava will keep most of your face exposed, but your eyes will be exposed and your nose will be exposed, but your cheeks and your chin and your forehead will all be covered. And of course your entire head. So, and you could wear a balaclava under another hat or a hood. And those will help to keep you warm. And then gloves are essential when it's going to be really cold. Oh, this just changed. It's going to be a low of 6 degrees on Friday night as well. We're going to have some cold temperatures and it's going to start making its way up for Sunday. But it looks like after the snow squalls today, it's going to be sunny for the next little while and at least through Sunday. So the other thing to keep you warm is to eat warm food. And this is a time of year to eat foods that are warmer. Like if you're a big salad person, if you like to eat salad and you're going to eat salad anyway, consider putting spicy stuff on your salad. This is when to break out the Cajun seasoning or the spicy peppers or have a spicy salad dressing. That's a good idea because cayenne pepper and different hot spices they'll make you feel warmer. One of the ways they do it is because they have a little bit of counter irritation going on. They deplete substance P and they increase circulation. That makes you feel warmer. So things like cinnamon and ginger and cloves and, of course, all of the peppers, any spicy peppers, they're all really nice. I love a good cup of chai tea this time of year, with a lot of black pepper and cinnamon and ginger. That's a really nice warming drink. And then, you know, a little bit of caffeine from the tea, always a good thing. It's a lovely thing to have this time of year. And the other thing is if you like hot cocoa, there are ways to have hot cocoa where you don't have to if you're starting to watch your sugar because you're like, oh my goodness, there was so much candy around this time of year. I really need to cut back. There are ways to make hot cocoa lower calorie. First of all, there are lower calorie hot cocos. There are a couple of brands that you can get hot cocoa that's pre-sweetened. It does have dairy in it, but what's convenient about it because there's already dairy in it, it's instant. You can just throw it in a cup and have a nice hot cup of hot cocoa. And it's sweetened with erythritol and stevia. So you can get hot cocoa like that. What I like to do is I like to throw turmeric and cinnamon and ginger and cayenne in that. I have a blend that I get, and you can get these at the health food store. There's a turmeric product that's a powdered turmeric that has turmeric and antioxidants and cinnamon and ginger and a bunch of stuff in it. And you put a little scoop of that in and it's wonderful in your hot cocoa. If you don't have that, you can simply make your hot cocoa and again, make a so-called Mexican hot cocoa. You throw cinnamon in it and a bit of cayenne. You could do a little ginger powder. You could do some grated ginger into it. And I love having that. This time of year, spicy hot cocoa is one of my jams. One of the reasons I do that is because I'm a caffeine lightweight. And if I have caffeine too late in the day, it makes it harder for me to sleep. And cocoa has, even though it has some caffeine, doesn't have as much as tea or coffee. And so that works for me if I want a hot drink later in the day. And then to spice it up, it's so lovely and warming. Of course, eating lovely warming foods this time of year is a great idea. This is a great time of year to be eating soup and a great time of year to be eating chili. And of course, you know, we got the Super Bowl coming on Sunday. So people are making a lot of interesting, all kinds of interesting treats for that great event. And of course, this is when you want to consider your hot wings and your chili. And chili can be really healthy. And chili can be vegetarian. And chili can have meat in it. And chili can have turkey in it. Have all kinds of great things in it. Some people, and if you're making chili, you can make a chili with some neat recipes where you have a lot of your standard tomato chili and whatever beans you're going to put in them. If you prefer black beans or if you prefer kidney beans or, white beans or pinto beans, whatever beans are your favorite, or your red beans for your chili, whatever ones you prefer. And then, you know, your tomato sauce and your peppers and whatever your mixture is going to be. And there's some interesting takes you can do for chili. You can cut up tempeh or a heavy tofu. Like if you want to put tofu in your chili, you can get, I would get the extra firm tofu and cut that up and throw it in, and it takes on the flavor of the chili. And that's for you vegetarians, and for non-vegetarians, you can throw a little extra soy protein in, and it's it actually has, if you like the texture of tofu, I happen to like it, and I especially like it if it's been seasoned and flavored with all kinds of stuff around it. I find it very good. You know, you can have chicken in your chili, and the chicken can be ground up, and you can have pieces of a pulled chicken breast. That's lovely in chili as well. And cool secret ingredients for chili: coffee and cocoa. Yeah, you can throw those into your chili and they give it a new twist. The other thing I like, not everybody likes this, because we found a chocolate bar at the co-op. Wait for it. It's chocolate and it has licorice and sea salt in it. So good if you like that sort of thing. And Andrea and I were eating it at the office yesterday. And, you know, we're from New York, New Jersey. And she's Italian and I'm Jewish. And I grew up around Italian people and she grew up around Jewish people. So we're very ethnically similar in some ways. And, you know, we grew up with our parents getting Stella Doro Anisette toast. It was funny because Amy was with us and she was like, she was not into the anisette toast, and she doesn't like licorice. But for Andrea and I, that licorice taste was a childhood memory for us. Because she's Italian, and of course, you know, they do a lot of anisette. And my parents always liked it. So we had Stella Doro anisette toast in the house. So we're sitting here eating this licorice chocolate with the salt. It's very interesting. It was actually quite yummy. You know, sorry to those of you who don't like licorice, but it was so interesting. So in terms of spicing it up, if you're going to have an interesting chili, cocoa powder and coffee can be two ingredients in your chili. And other spicy soups are great ideas. And again, the idea of the hot cocoa or hot cocoa or chai tea that has a lot of spice in it, that's going to help to keep you warmer. Now, some of you unfortunately have Raynaud's phenomenon Raynaud's phenomenon is this unfortunate condition where you have it's sort of an inflammatory condition where you have an inflammatory response to the cold. And what'll happen is your fingers will clamp up. There'll be an inflammatory response, and they'll turn blue, and then they'll turn white. And then when they warm up, it's very painful for the blood to get back into them. And it'll happen in response to the cold. And typically, people get it in their hands and their feet. You can also get it on your nipples. But that's less common. That'll happen if you're out. That'll tend to happen if you're sweating. If you're working out, sweating, and then you become chilled, you're more likely to get that phenomenon in your nipples. But your hands and your feet is very common, especially if your hands and your feet get cold. If they're damp and also cold, you're more likely to have a flare of the Raynaud's. And you have to be real careful. It's not just an acute painful condition. Raynaud's phenomenon over time can wear down your hands and make it so that you can actually get scar tissue in your hands, and it can actually affect the circulation in your hands. So once you get the Raynaud's, if you get it again, it gets worse because it really compromises circulation in your hands and your feet. So it's a really good idea to keep those hands and feet warm. And this is where you want to think about getting hand warmers. And you can get those chemical hand warmers, those little plastic packets where you break a chemical inside, and it's a thermogenic reaction inside the little plastic packet. And those are nice to have in your hands. Of course, you know, they're only single use. Did you know you can also buy electronic hand warmers? I just ordered one. Because I always said, you know, I really should have a hand warmer for the office, because sometimes my hands get cold and then I go to to examine my patients. My hands are cold and they nearly jump off the table. And so I said, you know what, maybe I should get a hand warmer. So I said, somebody should invent one of those for doctors. And I said that to a patient yesterday and she laughed. Then I went on, I went online and looked for hand warmer. Guess what? It's a thing. And I found one that doubles as a charger. So you can plug your devices into it and charge them. But it also, you charge it up. And once it's charged up, it will stay warm for 6 hours. You can buy one or two, and basically it's something that you're expected to put in your two hands and hold on to. And the use is for people who are sitting outside. It's marketed to people who camp or are sitting outside watching an event. That's what it's for. But I'm going to use it to warm my hands in my office so I don't upset my patients with my cold hands. I don't know if any other doctors have done this, but if you're a physician or if you're any kind of a practitioner and, you know, your hands aren't, because when you're a physician, you know, you're sitting and talking to the patient and you're not moving around much. And if your hands tend to get cold, then you're having to get up and here you are now with cold hands. Whereas, if you're a massage therapist, they might be cold at first go, but they're going to warm up, you know, cause you're moving around and you're getting circulation going. But, yeah, that happens to me. So I'm excited about that. The other thing I got, because I do this silly thing. I make myself a nice cup of tea in the morning and take it to the office. And then I put it in a travel mug, but the travel mug is not that great. It's not wonderfully insulated. So obviously I could get a better insulated travel mug, or I can get a mug warmer. I didn't know that was a thing. And shout out to my to one of my patients who told me about this. You can get a mug warmer and it will keep your mug warm. You can put it on your desk and set your mug on it and it'll keep your mug warm for you. It's like a little coaster that heats up, and it heats up to, like, you know, 100, just over 100 degrees. Who knew? So I'm excited for these things because, you know, if you're someone who tends to toss your coffee or tea when it gets cold, you don't have to do that. And also, if you don't like to stick it in the microwave, which is what I wind up doing sometimes. Of course, if it's in my travel mug has metal in it, so I can't do that. And of course, I could transfer it to a regular mug, which we have in the office, but it doesn't happen because I'm here, there, and everywhere working. But who knew there was such a thing as a mug warmer? I didn't know that. All right. So some ways to keep warm, you know, and the thing is too, if you tend to suffer in the cold and you can stay inside, maybe it's a good time to stay inside and figure out things to do indoors. And if you, if you're having issues, if you need warming centers, we do have that. There are warming that the Ned Lamont has called a state of emergency precautions in the state with respect to the cold. So a lot of senior centers are now warming centers, and a lot of places are designated warming centers. So if your place where you're staying is not warm enough, there are places you can go and get warm. So a lot of senior centers are that way. I haven't checked the Mansfield Community Center is usually a warming center. I haven't double checked to see if that is going on. It probably is, but check to be sure. But don't stay out in the cold. Go somewhere and stay with people who have more heat than you, or go find a warming center. You don't have to be out in the cold. And so, of course, we have the wonderful No Freeze Project in Willimantic if you need that. And the No Freeze Shelter is in Willimantic, and that's a place you can go to if you need that. All right. So here's what I wanted to talk about as well today. I wanted to do a review of cholesterol. All of the interesting factors about cholesterol, because I've been learning a lot more about it. People get really confused about their cholesterol because right now, if you have an LDL, that is a low-density lipoprotein, above 100, doctors are going to start offering you statins. And I've seen it. I've seen people with the reference range used to be 130. And they drop the reference range down to 100. And there are doctors who really believe that the less the better. And that doesn't make sense to me, because you need cholesterol as a as a building block in your body. Cholesterol is a precursor to vitamin D. Cholesterol is part of every cell membrane in your entire body. Places where you have a lot of cells need more cholesterol. So if you have lower cholesterol, you're not going to have as much available to do the things that you need it to do in your brain. In your brain and then the rest of your body. If you don't have a lot of cholesterol, tissues start to break down. And there are side effects related to cholesterol that is too low from statin drugs. Among them are blood sugar dysregulation. People are more likely to get diabetes. Their risk of diabetes increases when they do statin drugs. Of course, the first side effect that a lot of people get is body aches and joint pain. Why? Because their body is not as able to repair itself because there's not as much cholesterol available. Your body is always in a state of use and repair. That when I move my arm, you can't see me moving my arm. I'm moving my arm right now. You can't see it. But when I move my arm like that, I'm using muscle cells and my body has to recover from that. And I need nutrition to help that muscle recover from that all the time. I need protein, I need fat, and I need cholesterol. And the cholesterol helps those cell membranes to work the way that they're supposed to. And to be have structure the way that they're supposed to. And if you don't have enough, you're not going to be able to rebuild cells. And you need to rebuild cells all the time. So if your cholesterol is too low, you can't have proper cell membranes. And cell membranes are where your insulin goes in and out, and your insulin bonds to your cell membranes, gating the sugar to get in and out of your cells. And it's not going to be as able to regulate if you don't have good functioning cell membranes. That's the big problem with lowering cholesterol too much, that you can't repair your cells everywhere. And that's why one of the first things you feel if you're taking a statin and it's not working well for you, one of the first things that you feel is pain. You feel musculoskeletal pain. People get joint pain and body aches. If it gets bad enough, you can get a really bad condition called rhabdomyolysis. And rhabdomyolysis is where your muscle cells break down and they break apart and they dump a whole bunch of the red pigment in your muscles that carries oxygen called myoglobin. The myoglobin gets dumped into your blood and a whole bunch of it gets dumped in and it overwhelms your kidneys and your kidneys can shut down. That's what rhabdomyolysis is. And there is a risk of rhabdomyolysis when you take statin drugs. And one of the reasons you get rhabdomyolysis and difficulty rebuilding your cells, your muscle cells, is the depletion of coenzyme Q10. So coenzyme Q10 is a very important molecule in your body. It runs the electron transport chain. Your muscles are moving all the time. You're using them because you're always moving. And so CoQ10 is really critical in stuff that's moving all the time that gets a lot of use. So your skeletal muscles move you from here to there, even if it's just to get up and change the channel on the TV, which nobody does anymore because they use the remote. Even if it's just to use the remote, or even if it's to go to the bathroom or go get a snack or go yay Patriots or whatever you're cheering for or boo the Saints loss or whatever your thing is, right? So you're using your muscles all the time. You're using your muscles to blink your eyes. You're using your muscles to talk incessantly here on Radio Naturopath. Those muscles need to be regenerated and repaired, and coenzyme Q10 helps to run the muscles. And if you don't have enough CoQ10, they're not going to run properly and they're not going to repair properly. The other organ that needs CoQ10 intensely is your heart. When you don't have enough coenzyme Q10, you can get high blood pressure and you can get heart rhythm issues. In fact, the opposite is true. If you have heart rhythm issues and high blood pressure, you can help treat it with coenzyme Q10. It's a really helpful thing. I take coenzyme Q10 because I have a predisposition towards premature ventricular contractions, although I haven't had one in a while. I get them very occasionally, and the less sugar I eat, the more rest I get, the more hydrated I am, the more magnesium I get, the less likely I am to get them. But right now, my heart's fine, doing good. So anyway... if you are taking a statin drug, you must take coenzyme Q10 because statin drugs deplete coenzyme Q10. When you block the enzyme that statin that statins block, the HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. The HMG-CoA reductase in the pathway of HMG-CoA reductase is coenzyme Q10. So coenzyme Q10 is produced down the line. And so if you block that enzyme with a statin, you're going to block your production of CoQ10. So you have to replace it. So if you are taking a statin for whatever reason, or if you've been taking a statin, whether you intend to come off it or not, it's a good idea to take CoQ10 any which way. All right, so what is all this stuff? So we'll do a review. LDL is low-density lipoprotein, and that's the one that your doctors want you to get below 100. All it is, it's a protein that carries cholesterol from your liver out to your body for use. HDL is high-density lipoprotein, which is the protein that carries cholesterol from the rest of your body back to your liver for use to make it into other stuff like hormones and vitamin D and other stuff that cholesterol is a precursor for, like liver cells, things like that, all kinds of other cells. And so that's what HDL does. When you're very simplistic, you call LDL the lousy cholesterol and the HDL the happy cholesterol. And it's not as simple as that. It's true that the higher your HDL, the lower your cardiovascular risk. And a great way to make HDL is to get cardio exercise, unless you're one of those unlucky people who genetically has a hard time making HDL. And those people are out there because I see them in my practice. Then you have triglycerides. And it's the other thing that's commonly measured. It's the form that fat takes when it's running around in your blood. And if your triglycerides are too high, that does pose cardiovascular risk because triglycerides can be oxidized. They're easily oxidized, and when they're oxidized, they can do damage to the inside of your blood vessels called the endothelium and make you more likely to make plaques that block your arteries. Triglycerides will go high if you eat too much starch and sugar and don't get enough exercise. Triglycerides will go down if you cut back on your starch and sugar and get exercise. A great way to help to get triglycerides down is to exercise fasted. So if you exercise first thing in the morning without eating, if you can do that. If you can't do that, it's okay. Don't do it. But if you have a thrifty gene, most people can exercise for some period of time fasted. Ron can't, but I can. If I do early morning workouts, I tend to do it fasted. If I'm going to do a long workout or if I have to perform for some reason, like I have to go fast, then I don't do that. I have something. If you're going to, if you work out fasted first thing in the morning, it will help burn up your triglycerides. So that I'm talking about, half an hour to an hour. And if you're really working hard for a longer period of time and you're working for performance, of course, don't do that. But then you probably aren't going to have a triglyceride problem anyway. You're going to probably burn them out anyway because you're going to use any fuel that you consume for that workout. But for your average person who's working on getting their cholesterol down, getting their weight down, working on being healthier, you probably can do some kind of workout for a short period of time without eating. So, and that's a great way to fry your triglycerides. So LDL, when you're talking about LDL, when you say my LDL number is 100, what you're talking about is the volume that it's taking up in your blood. That's 100 milligrams per deciliter. You can measure LDL in terms of its particles, how many particles you have and how big the particles are. So it's how much space all your LDL takes up, how many pieces of LDL you have, and how big each of those pieces are. So if your LDL, if you have a lot of LDL particles, that supposedly increases your cardiovascular risk. However, if the particles are small and dense, that poses the most cardiovascular risk because those little particles can get caught in between the cells of your arteries and stick there more readily. Then you have a whole bunch of other factors. So you have things like ApoB100. ApoB100 is a lipoprotein that will stick to your LDL and make it stick to your blood vessels more likely. And then you have lipoprotein little A, which is a tough one because it's really hard to bring down. I've tried over the years to help people with elevated, people are genetically predisposed to making too much lipoprotein little A, and it's very hard to get down. One of the things that's recommended is to use a combination of vitamin C, proline, and lysine, and I give people that combination. I don't see a lot of movement a lot of the time, so what I tend to do is work around it and make sure they're not inflamed in other ways, because it's hard to get that lipoprotein little A down. Then there's your cardiac C-reactive protein. If your cardiac C-reactive protein is between 1 and 10, you may have some cardiovascular inflammation. If your cardiac C-reactive protein, your high sensitivity C-reactive protein, if it's between 1 and 10, you probably have some cardiovascular inflammation. If it's over 10, you probably have some non-cardiac inflammation, so it becomes less specific. Then you have lipoprotein PLA2, which is that's a more specific marker for cardiovascular inflammation, and that's something that you try to help bring down. Then you have ADMA and SDMA. ADMA is asymmetric dimethylarginine, and SDMA is symmetric dimethylarginine. So asymmetric dimethylarginine is an indicator of endothelial function. So the endothelium is the inner lining of your blood vessel, of your arteries. And if you have nice stretchy endothelium, and you have your blood vessels are nice and elastic, then your ADMA will tend to be lower. And if your ADMA is lower, then you know it's an indicator of good function. If your ADMA is high, then it's a good idea to increase the nitric oxide in your life. And how do you do that? You can take arginine. You can also eat stuff with arginine in it, like nuts and seeds. And for you people who have herpes, you have to be careful with that, because arginine feeds herpes viruses. So to mitigate that, you can also take lysine. But sometimes it depends how sensitive you are to the arginine if you have herpes. The thing I love to tell people to do when they have an elevated ADMA or they need better nitric oxide function is to drink beet juice. And do eat beets. Absolutely eat beets. It's just that you get more of the nitric oxide enhancing properties from the juice because it's more concentrated. So that's a good idea to do. So there's ADMA and there's SDMA, and SDMA is the symmetric dimethylarginine. When that's elevated, that's actually an indicator of kidney function. So if your kidneys are failing, you may have an elevated symmetric dimethylarginine. Then there's your LDL. You measure whether your LDL is oxidized. If your LDL is running around and it's large and buoyant and you don't have a lot of particles, or the particles you do have are large and buoyant and they're not oxidized, you're probably at low risk for cardiovascular disease, and you don't have to worry. My opinion is you don't have to worry as much what your actual LDL volume is, that number that your doctor's telling you that should be lower than 100. You don't have to worry about that as much, in my opinion, if your LDL isn't oxidized, and if your LDL particles are large and buoyant, and also if you have a low cardiac C-reactive protein. If your C-reactive protein is low, then you're not inflamed, so it doesn't matter. If the LDL is running around and it's not sticking to anything, it's not a big deal. Then you're going to actually be able to repair stuff better. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Then you have an interesting compound called TMAO. I'm going to go ahead and remind myself what TMAO stands for. And TMAO stands for trimethylamine N-oxide. And so it's a class of amine oxides, and its deal is when it's elevated, it's an indicator for cardiovascular dysfunction as well. When you have higher TMAO, you might be you're at greater risk for major cardiac events, unfortunately. So you know how we say LDL, the way that your LDL tends to go up, and the way that you have small dense LDL, is because of not enough exercise and eating too much starch and sugar and not eating enough fruits and vegetables, foods that are high in antioxidants and foods that clean you out, and also foods that give you good gut flora. So TMAO, this trimethylamine N-oxide will be higher if you don't have good gut flora. Also, if you consume too much carnitine and also choline and phosphatidylcholine. If you eat too much of those, now you need some of those because you can't have no carnitine. You need some carnitine. Oh, brother, I double negatived. Because carnitine is a fuel injector for free fatty acids into the mitochondria. So it is important. So you can't have none, but if you take extra carnitine, that's not a good idea if you have elevated TMAO. And choline and phosphatidylcholine will increase your levels of TMAO as well. So it's actually produced by gut flora. So if you have gut flora dysfunction, that's when you're going to make more TMAO. So the answer to that is, so you know how you say, if you're eating too much meat, that gives you cardiovascular disease. That's a very simplistic statement. You eating too much meat will give you cardiovascular disease if you're eating meat with poor quality fat in it. So if the meat is CAFO, you know, it's been on, you know, feedlot animals that are eating GMO corn, they're going to have a lot of arachidonic acid in their muscle tissue. And that acid will give you more arachidonic acid and linoleic acid in your body. And those omega-6 fatty acids are not good for your arteries. That gives you more inflammation. And so that does contribute to cardiovascular disease. If you're eating grass-fed beef, it doesn't contribute to cardiovascular disease unless you're one of those people that is making too much TMAO. So if you come in and you're eating grass-fed beef and you have very low TMAO, I'm going to tell you to keep right on eating that grass-fed beef. It's not going to affect your cardiovascular disease. Also, if you have high LDL, but you're eating grass-fed beef, I'm not going to tell you to stop if your TMAO is low. But if your TMAO is elevated, you're probably a person that needs to be closer to a vegetarian. If your TMAO is elevated, it will elevate by eating meat, mostly red meat, eggs, and dairy. So, you know how you're like, oh, if you eat too much pizza, if you eat too much dairy, if you eat too much dairy fat, it's going to give you cardiovascular disease, artery clogging, saturated fat. Again, that's a very simplistic statement. Saturated fat all by itself doesn't really clog your arteries. That's not what happens. But some people do make more cholesterol when they eat saturated fat. Again, if your cholesterol is high, but it's not oxidized and it's not sticking to anything, you're not going to have cardiovascular disease. Some people are hyperabsorbers or hyperproducers of cholesterol. I don't think that measure is as important as whether everything is oxidized, except when you start talking about people with familial hypercholesterolemia, because people with familial hypercholesterolemia, they do have increased risk of cardiovascular disease. And now we're talking your people's total cholesterols in the 3 to 400 range, and they have LDLs of over 200. But if that's not you and your doc is trying to give you statins and you have an LDL of 150, then it's a good idea to come and see your friendly local naturopath. Could be me, could be somebody else, and get all these things tested and figure out which direction you need to go. It may not be necessary for you to be on a statin. There's some other things that you can tweak. But if you have an elevated TMAO, the actual meat, it's not the fat, it's the meat that's the problem, because the red meat is getting the carnitine. You're supplying the gut flora with carnitine, which is then making this TMAO. And this TMAO, unfortunately, is a contributor to atherosclerosis and cardiovascular disease, as is the choline and the phosphatidylcholine in eggs. So this would be where you wouldn't be eating eggs all the time, and dairy as well. Makes you make more TMAO if you're predisposed. Not everybody's predisposed to doing that, and it probably has to do with what their gut flora is doing. How can you improve your gut flora? To quote Michael Pollan, like I've never done before, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. All right? That's the big way you improve your gut flora. And then you run around like I do, and I have a Kevita in the fridge, and I have kombucha, and I'm taking sips off that all day. So I'm getting my ferments in, and I also take probiotic pills, and you can do that as well. You can take probiotic pills, and you can, if dairy is an issue for you, you can do other fermented foods. You can do alternative yogurts that are made from coconut or cashew, other mixed plant proteins. You can have fermented other stuff. You can get fermented vegetables, lovely sauerkraut, like we said, kombucha, water kefir. There's a lot of great things that you can have that are fermented. You can get other fermented vegetables. You can make them yourself, or you can get them in jars at the health food store. There's lovely fermented carrots with ginger in them that are very nice. Good old sauerkraut. I love sauerkraut. Not everybody likes sauerkraut, but I'm a lover of sauerkraut. So I would eat sauerkraut. I don't know why I don't eat it more. I just don't tend to eat things that it goes on. But I could just have some. It would be all right to do. This is something that some naturopaths recommend, that whether or not you're having a bratwurst for your dinner, have at least a bite, like a spoonful of whatever you're having, even if you're having pasta with sauce and a salad on the side, just have a bite of sauerkraut, you know, just so you're getting a little bit of ferment into your body. So those fermented items, you know, when you eat sauerkraut, you're eating the substrate for the probiotics. So you're basically eating prebiotic, and then you're eating probiotic that goes on it, and it's getting into your body all in a nice, neat little package. So exciting to do. All right. So there you go. So that's a review of cholesterol. So all these things you can get tested for, and you can ask your doc if your doc will do it for you. If your doc won't, either you need a creative cardiologist, and they are out there. Big shout out to Jeffrey Thompson up in Enfield and Sean Brady. Or you can go to a naturopathic physician. Naturopathic physicians, we like to test these unusual tests, and we're happy to test you for things, you know, give you a good, thorough cholesterol screening, where we look at all of these different factors. And then there are some neat things we can do. We can really target your nutrition and your digestion by doing a bunch of simple tests, and it'll get a lot more specific. So somebody who has, so say I test somebody and they have small dense LDL, but they have a normal lipoprotein PLA2 and oxidized LDL, I'm going to tell that person, well, you need to back off on your starch and sugar and you need to get more exercise. If you have an elevated ADMA, but everything else looks good, I'm going to say drink some beet juice and do eat your fruits and vegetables. There are other, even raw organic cocoa is a good nitric oxide enhancer. So is cayenne pepper. I'm going to give you some things to do to increase your, to decrease your ADMA levels and improve your endothelial function. If I see you have a high TMAO, you're the unlucky one who I'm going to say, you know what? You're one of those people that should be closer to a vegetarian, and red meat and dairy and eggs are something you should think of as treats. And I know it's interesting because my TMAO, I tested my TMAO, and my TMAO was moderately elevated. It wasn't extremely elevated, but moderately. And the other thing that can happen with TMAO, there is direct TMAO in shellfish and some other fish. And I eat fish, and I'll go get the gumbo from the fish market, which I love. And so I'm not sure if that elevation in TMAO was actually from cardiovascular risk, or was it from, because I had recently eaten shellfish. But I was picking at the sugar. You know, we got a lot of sweets as gifts over the holidays. We just had a lot of sugar around, and we still have it around. But to our credit, we haven't eaten it all. And I'm on a sugar cleanse. I'm not 100% off it, but I've backed down. I've got some coconut sugar, which I really like because it has inulin in it. It's not as sweet as regular sugar, but it has inulin, which is good for your gut flora. So I'm doing a bunch of things to help to reduce my sugar consumption. You know, I'm not picking at the sweets all the time, and I made a really healthy dessert, like a healthy apple crisp. And I, in the streusel, I put oat bran and oats just to give it more of a health kick to it. All right, so that's Radio Naturopath for today, Marley's sixth birthday, January 30th, 2019. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, and this is a call and talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza, who is away pursuing the sun. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS Stores.